Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful to be with you on this 29th day of August 2020. We're going to look at, a subject that most people just try to avoid at all costs. And yet it is one that is going to be very, very important for our lives, our development, even maybe our future. It's the word commitment. The state or quality of being dedicated to a cause or an activity. Wow. An engagement or obligation that restricts freedom of action, according to the dictionary. The two are very interesting. It's considered something of an obligation that restricts a person's freedom to do whatever they want. And yet I am telling you, as I have been reading, I'm sure as you have too, about this virus and how it spreads and how people have been extremely cavalier about it, especially the young people. They just don't want to be restricted. So what is this thing called commitment, and what are we committed to? I get questions about the idea of commitment. I am grateful for them. I have collected these over the last 4 months. So these questions have been sitting in the hopper, as it were, for a while, but I think they're very, very important. What do you think commitment is? Do you agree that it is something that an engagement, they say, an obligation to restrict your freedom? Or is it something you can be dedicated to, like a cause or an activity that might have some noble purposes to it? It depends on who you are. It depends on what we're talking about when we're talking about the idea of being committed and what that is all about. It is interesting to look at the whole idea of commitment, and that's what we're going to do. Our first question is from Tribby. I don't know where Tribby lives. He says, your website is boggling to me. What do you ask of your students? Total commitment seems a little too much to ask, Tribby. No, Tribby, I am. The commitment that my students or any visitor comes to see at the Aspire website is to themselves and to the process of awakening. And this all depends upon one's sincerity, the deepest, most authentic part of themselves. You see, Tribby, the greatest teacher in the world is not sitting here talking to you via this radio program. The greatest teacher in the world is the one that you learn from, called futility. And we are committed to this world, whether we like it or not. You're here in a body. You're committed to that. You're committed to the throes of emotionality that come and go from your state of genetics, and going back and forth, fighting with yourself about what you want to do and your freedom and, you know, the obligation. You have obligations to your body. You do, if you want a healthy one. And most people don't want to die right away, okay? They don't. And these kids are partying and having weddings and 4th of July parties and Memorial Day party, all these things that people have done which have spread the virus. You know, they just, and they don't care. There was a big article in the Chronicle this morning about selfishness of people and how other countries are actually lowering the virus rate, but not America, because there is this idea of being committed to a cause that restricts their freedom as they see it. The mask has become a political thing. It's become an ego trip, as it were. And the sad part about it all is that in making it this way, we are hurting each other. So the question you ask, your website is boggling. What do you ask of your students? Each student has to come and decide how committed they're going to be to their own awakening. That's not up to me. Do I urge it? I suggest it, but I can't do anything more than that. How are you going to know the meaning of your life if you're not committed to the significance of your living? You're not going to. So what I do is I try to help them understand the significance of their life and how that penetrates into the world and makes for a lifetime of sustained meaning and substance. What you see on the website is all sorts of different suggestions about how to come to some place within yourself where you find the authentic cause of freedom. Freedom is not something you gain by just doing what you want, which the millennials and the pedestrian mentality hands down to one generation after another. No, it is about knowing the things that restrict your freedom, that counteract your freedom, and living in the discipline of not allowing those elements to enter into your life. So, how does that look? Well, there are certain laws. Simple. I'll do some simple ones for you. As you sow, so shall you reap. That's a discipline. That is a commitment. You have to be committed to the idea that whatever you send out into this world is going to come back to you. And it is going to come back. As you sow, the things you sow in your mind, the things you believe in, the things that you have some sort of emotional attachment to, they're going to go out into the world and come back to you. You can say, oh, I don't believe in that. But as you get a little older and as you start to see how things work, you'll see that many of the things that you deeply believe in have come true. Indifference is a belief, okay? So if you're indifferent to the laws that exist, if you're indifferent to the meaning and the substance of love, of kindness, of compassion, of forgiveness, you won't die by the hand of the virus. You will die by your own hand, believe it or not. The one that made the virus possible in you. That virus is hate and fear, anger, hostility. You will see how these things come together and create within you commitments that you have made to your livingness. Do most people see this? No, not at all. They're too busy being whatever they are at the time, usually contrary. Everybody wants to be special and be free and look at me, I can do whatever I want and all this stuff is baloney, but it's not. What you see on the website, Tribby, is an opportunity to enter into a discipline. And that discipline has to become a commitment, and that commitment has to be understood for what it is. So, as you sow, so shall you reap. There is the simplest one of them all. Okay? That is something that most people can wrap their head around. But do we honor that? Do we live with that? Is that something we can deal with? Probably not. Most people are not interested in the laws that would bring them to freedom. So you start to understand the sense and the meaning of freedom beyond the ideals of what I want me to think of as my freedom. And then we start to enter into some really funky stuff. So Tribby, there you are. It's just a real easy thing to understand, not easy to do. The website is just an opportunity. And while there are many things on the website for you to look at, maybe to consider inside yourself, you might want to look at them instead of thinking about how they restrict you, maybe how they set you free. Let me read you a closing here from Epitus, who was a very beautiful Greek philosopher, and he is right about this. Try to listen. Freedom isn't the right or ability to do whatever you please. Freedom comes from understanding the limits of our own power and the natural limits set in place by divine providence. By accepting life's limits and and working with them rather than fighting with them, forgive me, we become free. If, on the other hand, we succumb to our passing desires for things that aren't in our control, freedom is lost. Inevitabilities is the word I was stumbled over and ruined here, but you get the drift of this, I'm sure. Sometimes my lips don't work as fast as my tongue. So if you understand what I'm saying to you here, there are limits to everything in this world. And the object of the game, Tribby, is to come to a place where you understand the laws that are here and how they work in this world. And instead of succumbing to our desires, to begin to emerge from them through love. You have to see the bigger picture, and most people don't. And what you see on the website is something now. It used to be in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, you know, just, oh, yes, I understand that. To now, it's offensive, and I don't like that. So that's the inevitability, there it is, of the way most people think. And forgive me for being so clumsy. Namaste. Okay. Next one comes from Harold. He does not tell me where he lives. Seems to me that meditation is a huge commitment that interferes with the day or changes your schedule. Is that true? And how do people deal with that, Harold? Yes, you are right, Harold. Very, very, very good. Meditation does change the schedules of people. They change the schedules of the way people live. It's a lifestyle. Meditation first becomes something you do. You know, it's a like an exercise. You touch your toes with your fingers, you know, that kind of thing. And then after a while, if you practice it with any amount of intelligence or sincerity, it becomes something else. First, it is something you do, then it becomes a discipline of what you do, and then if you go a little deeper, it becomes a lifestyle. And that's when meditation becomes deeply important. That's when you hit pay dirt, when meditation becomes the initial lifestyle of a person. This lifestyle is very, very important to understand. Meditation is the flow of energy and energetics that is love itself. And if you don't live your life in that energetic, if you don't flow with that energetic, you miss. And so you make it an exercise of mind and maybe body a little bit. People like to do Western yoga because it incorporates breath and physicality. And people are kind of game on that, but they won't commit to doing any kind of catharsis. That's the sad part. They need catharsis. In the East, yoga is very different. It is the way you live. It's the way you breathe in everyday life. And the same thing is true in meditation, in Zen. You just breathe it. You watch your breath. You flow with the breath. You are not engaging in thought itself. That's the discipline. That's the commitment to restrict your mind from the obligation of thinking from emotionality. And when a person is able to do this, when they're willing to do this, that is when something of the other shore now comes into play in their life. In our life, it's all about the news. It's all about anything that emotionally entertains us. Yes, meditation, a life of meditation, is very disruptive to the contrary mind. The mind that is supporting and thinking in terms of ego, vanity, pride. And as long as that is more important than a spiritual awakening, I've had many students, guys that would come in, women too, and they actually pit their meditation against themselves. They're not very studious about it all, but they do it. Their whole cause or activity in the course of their practice is to improve their life and make it more comfortable. And when I tell them, no, that's not the way, they agree, but then they get back in their car and drive home and do the same thing over and over again. Well, what good is it if it doesn't improve my life or make my daily living better, easier, or whatever they want it to be? It's of no use to you then, because that's not what it's about. It's about the flow. It's about the energetics of entering into the flow of life itself, real life. Not Greg Penn life, but real life. In your case, you know, not Harold life, but authentic life. Life that exists as life itself. And few people have ever experienced that, nor do they want to. They don't care to. They don't see the advantage of it. When you live a meditative life, you're mindful. When you're in a meditative life, you see the horizon, and then you see the bigger picture of your life. Then you understand how this act fits that consequence. You understand the depth of your livingness and how everything matters and how everything has an interesting way of coming back into our livingness. There is a gentleness in you. Instead of handling life in a difficult way, like you were handling a wild animal, you handle it with compassion. You understand what life is trying to show you, which is always one thing. It is always trying to show you love. Always. And if I'm not contrary to love, if I'm not contrary to meditation and being mindful about everything, if I'm not in competition, if I am not measuring myself by my human standards, then I can enter into it, Harold, with a sense of gratitude, humility, meekness. I'm available. All meditation is being available. And you can be available to it at any time, in any moment. Really. And if you are just slightly available to it, meditation can take root in your life, bring you a new tree to live off of, a new tree of life, where the fruit is nourishing and it offers great insight, maturity. We're not a mature people if you really look at it. I mean, we can all see we're not very mature. And our immaturity lies in the way we live in a kind of I want to do whatever I want to do thing. We are committed to the engagement of not being obligated. We don't want to be obligated to anything. And yet here we are. It's an amazing thing that people do to their lives. And I find it interesting that life is all about the state of a love that most people yearn for but can't recognize. And that's the sad part of it all. Harold, meditation, is it a commitment? No, it's a surrender. It's, you have to have had a lot of futility in your life To me, meditation defines the very meaning of being sincere, of being intelligent. It is the surrender, the whole thing that Jesus talked about of being poor in spirit. So there you are. I hope that helps you. And if you're ready for it, it can do a lot of wonderful things. And thank you for your kind comments about the program. And please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question comes, let's see. Now, this is an interesting name, Voight, V-O-T. How does one commit to a practice that promises nothing in return like yours? Voight. The whole key to life is nothingness. That is everything that we gain, no matter what you do, no matter how much you have. You're going to leave this planet empty-handed, void. Get it? Without anything. Emptiness. Emptiness is exquisite. It's the most exquisite thing I have ever encountered in my life. And in that silence, that void, that no-thingness is the essence of life. We are more interested in being filled with the world, filled with desire, ambition, pride. We want things to be the way we want things to be. And that is filling us up with all sorts of emotional gratifications. In the emptiness that I speak of, the practice of no-thingness, one enters into the exquisite creativity of the universe. This creativity is constantly moving and going. It is making all sorts of beautiful and interesting and integral events, circumstances, and conditions. Now, if you practice the way, Voight, if you meditate and really practice the way, you will find that this exquisite love that lives within you is devoid of things and objects, of thought, of attitude, of belief. You will find that it is all about just the essence of life itself. And should you work on that with all your heart and soul and strength, you will find that the significance of your livingness becomes more important than the stuff that fills your world with what you think is significant and of importance, which is the stuff. It took me years to really come to this place in meditation, to be deeply moved, not gratified, but moved by the whole idea of emptiness, of no-thingness. But once you have experienced it ever so slightly in your life, this love will come pouring out of you. In fact, it won't be you anymore. You won't be you anymore. And that is the most amazing aspect of it all. There is no me, there is no I, there is no you. There is just this emptiness, exquisite emptiness. And it will pour out of you in so many different ways. It's worth many lifetimes to achieve. It really is. And you can do this. You can, if you find yourself devoted to love. I'm out of here. I gotta go. Jeez. Thank you for listening. Voight, I hope that helped you. Please forgive me. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Have some more really good questions, and I'm very grateful for them. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.